This episode of the 9to5 Mac Security Byte podcast is sponsored by Mozl. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Mozl is the only Apple unified platform for business. Mozl's integrated approach to management and security combines state-of-the-art Apple-specific security solutions for fully automated hardening and compliance, next-generation EDR, AI-powered Zero Trust, and exclusive privilege management with the most powerful and modern Apple MDM on the market. The result is a totally automated Apple unified platform currently trusted by over 45,000 organizations to make millions of Apple devices work ready with no effort and at an affordable cost. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, and protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a 30-day free trial and see firsthand why Mozl is more than an Apple MDM. Mozl is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mozl.com. That's business.mozl.com. Thanks to Mozl for sponsoring the 9to5 Mac Security Byte podcast. This is the 9to5 Mac Security Byte podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Wychulis, security writer for 9to5 Mac. And I'm very excited for today's episode that will take a slight detour from the usual Apple security topics to talk about data brokers and the underground economy they built with your information. Nothing is off limits. Your name, your phone number, geolocation history, financial and credit records, browsing habits, voter information, and seriously a ton more. All of it scraped, packaged, and traded online by companies you've never heard of. We're going to break down where this data is coming from, who's buying it, and why it's so hard to make it disappear. And stick around to the end because my guest ran a digital footprint report on me, so you'll be able to hear me react in real time to how much of my own data is floating around out there and what exactly it says about me. So joining me to break this all down is Miguel Fornes, a cybersecurity expert at Incogni, the well-known personal data removal service. Without further ado, Miguel, welcome.
Thank you so much, Arin, and thank you for having me here.
So this industry of data brokering is massive, and it's basically invisible. Even someone like me couldn't even name a single data broker, yet there are hundreds of companies out there holding detailed profiles on them right now. So let's start by taking a look at the source. I think most listeners just assume like all this stuff is public record, like phone books and property filings, whatever. But that's really just the first layer of data brokering, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's just like the most common, the thing that you will first think, what will be on the top of your head. But in the very same way as the internet, let's say, that has several layers, same happens with your data. And sometimes it's very tricky and extremely surprising the amount of data that once you scratch the surface, how it pops absolutely everywhere.
So, I mean, walk me through where a typical broker profile comes from. Like, what are the biggest feeds for these guys?
And this is where everything is so absolutely obscure, Arin. I think that regular individuals, regular people like you and me, average Joes, we never have any kind of business with these kind of companies. We don't even know actually what are the purpose and where they are. But the truth is that I think that perhaps abusing from that lack of information and lack of awareness, there's such amount of companies, there's like a large amount of companies worldwide, not just on the United States, that they are focused on simply scavenging, I would say that is the word, the personal data of absolutely everyone, everything, everybody that ever did anything online. And how that happens? Well, there is like a, I would say that there's like a point on how badly we learn on relating with the internet. And correct me if I'm wrong, Arin. When was the last time that you got and you read the terms and conditions? When was the last time that you paid attention to the privacy policy? When was the last time that when a website presented you with the banner of cookies, you just simply click, yes, 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 I agree, I consent, I whatever, just get me what I want. It's like, I'm busy. Don't put this on me for whatever thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something very silly. You are searching for a recipe of let's say paella. I'm actually Spaniard, so I have to put something. Let's imagine that you want to search on how it's done, the paella, or a proper sangria right now in summer. You Google something, it appears. Mm-hmm. Of course, you go for the top five results,
sure.
And you hit. The moment that you click there, bam, automatically, cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't care. You just want your simple recipe. Just get me the recipe.
Right, quick.
Same will happen if you download any kind of application. We were trained during the last 20 years to recklessly and carelessly accepting terms and conditions that some companies are sometimes hiding a lot of things behind that. Now, as this very famous saying, when you don't pay something, you are actually the merchandise, it's absolutely perfect for this case.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, you get something, you get your recipe for the paella. Just please don't add ketchup and stuff like that. That's a sin for me. You will get the recipe eventually, but what you don't know is that the moment that you clicked on accept, if you would pay attention, most of the websites will share every single thing that you do on your website and on the website. And when I'm saying every single thing, and this is where things get really funny, I'm talking about the location where you are located at, the type of device that you are using, how much time you are spending on the website, even the times that you move the mouse and where your hand, obviously the pointer of the mouse, where and hover on the site. Of course, if you log in, of course, if you get you put any kind of private information, all that will be automatically packed and slurped by a large amount of what they call partners. Those partners, and I'm doing the air quotation, mm-hmm. those partners actually sometimes, in most cases, they run between 150 to 600 third parties to which the website kindly enough sharing with you the paella or the sangria recipe will pack and sell for profit from mining your data. That is just one case. You wanted to know the sangria, you wanted to do the paella. Fine, fair enough. But this is repeated every single day, every time that you open a website, every time that you open an app, every time that you install something, just try to make the numbers. I'm talking about several dozens, if not hundreds of times on which we interact with third parties. And those third parties are systematically packing all the data that they got from us and selling it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were you aware of that? Of course, and this is where I think that as a society, we have to request a better control on our data, our privacy, and perhaps request to the policymakers, to the lawmakers, a better control of this. I'm really happy that that I'm European, because Europe took the lead, at least finally, for one of the very few cases lately, with the GDPR.
Mm-hmm.
And in the States, you have very, very thorough and really good examples as the California Privacy Act.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to teach companies. They have, like, I believe that they have like an obligation, a moral and ethical obligations toward society to teach about digital hygiene.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, this will never stop.
Right. So I asked, what feeds the data brokers are grabbing people's data? And the answer is just everywhere. Everything is a feed. The internet is a feed.
Absolutely everywhere. Now, and this is like the kind, educated, I would say, traditional way to slurp data. Mm-hmm. They are just paying money for your data to these third parties. But the truth is that also they take information that it's simply publicly available without any kind of permission in several cases.
So say they've built this profile on me. They know who I am. They know where I am. They know the devices that I use. They know what I eat, where I eat it, et cetera, et cetera. But so who's the main customer and consumer of this stuff? Is it law enforcement? Is it lenders or insurance firms?
And it's probably one of the scariest questions that you can make me. And you need to be, I hope that you will be concerned or not about this, but whoever, you know, a data broker is not, a security contractor. A data broker is not like, what can I tell you? It's like the manufacturers of Pegasus or Palantir or any kind of contractor that will need to run a thorough due diligence to know who on earth you are and what is your intention with that data. That's not happening. You got the money, you got the data. That's simply as that. It's literally as, it's something like a free to choose. It's like a buffet. Mm-hmm. You pay the entrance, you take whatever you want. What is the purpose? Well, God knows. Let's hope that not for something nefarious, but there's no such thing as control of to whom they sell our data.
So, and doing research for this podcast, I've learned that there's even broker-to-broker resale of people's data. So from what I understand, if I get, say I get some information, like I use Incogni, and I get some information deleted from one data broker, how do I know that my data hasn't already propagated to five others? Or even if my data was deleted in the first place?
Data brokers, they are, of course, they provide certain kind of rights to the final, let's say, targets. As sometimes they call us, we the people. Indeed, they delete. Of course, they delete. The moment that you go through the tortuous way of the website, following their process, they will always ask you confirmation of your email, which is, by the way, it's really funny. It's like, don't you got it? Why are you doing this? So they will put hurdles to avoid to delete the data, which is very much in, which is very much on their interest, because if now everybody will do it, they will run out of money, because remember, we are the merchandise. So indeed, there are certain ways. They are heavily manual, they are really tortuous, and they are always changing it every now and then to avoid any kind of automated or bot activity. The thing is that they are completely allowed to search again for your data and include it on the database. It's not like the right to be forgotten that we enjoy here in Europe, that the moment that you activate, the moment that you request the right to be forgotten, the company is not allowed to get again your personal information. Yes, they delete, but they can include it again in a couple of weeks or in 1 month. Mm. And if it was sold, further resold, then of course it's beyond their control, because that third or fourth degree data broker has nothing to do,
right.
has no responsibility to the original one. So yeah, it's like a web, I would say, like a web of deceit, this kind of.
So you can request to have information deleted, and they will delete it, but who says that they're not just going to collect it again in the next couple of weeks?
That's the importance. I think that this is one of the values of services like Incogni. We take care that, we ensure that not the data is properly deleted without any kind of hurdle to you, but also to ensure that they will not again re-index the internet. Because remember, you got into pagex.com. Your data will be sold. You request deletion. They delete. But the moment that you again go to page X, well, surprise, we got your data once again.
Right.
So that process could be repeated. I would say that. Because again, the data is data, Arin. It's, and we all agree. The problem is that data is, more often than not, is the fuel for cyber scams.
Mm-hmm.
Because absolutely nobody is making any kind of due diligence to ensure that the data is being sold to trustful and rightful parties. As long as you got the money, you will get the data.
So if my parents were here and they heard us talking about this, they would say something along the lines of, like, who cares if they have my name, my phone number? I'll just get spam texts and I'll block them, I'll delete them. What do you have to say to the people who just don't mind about all this data being collected on them?
Absolutely. I mean, that was the normal thing in the past. Come on. Mm-hmm. We started the conversation joking a little bit about my age. You know, I'm coming from an age on which the white and yellow pages was a thing. You yeah. had publicly on places a list of who was living where and having whatever phone. So that is something from the past. It's very reasonable. But times have advanced. Now, we are not anymore spending 16 hours on a horse or in a wagon to travel few hundred miles or kilometers. We are moving with time. And unfortunately, cyber scammers are actually moving together with time. And they are the first that actually they are adopting new technologies to increase their revenue. Because hiring is always about the money. If I will have the chance to tell your granddad or your dad, so what? Let me tell you. There are very obvious things of phishing. And this is the bad quality phishing. You know, we at certain point in the, I wouldn't say even in our life, but in our past days, we received such kind of email as, "Hello, I'm Warren Buffett. I have an issue with the tax collecting agency, IFRS or whatever. Please, could you help me to unlock the situation as I'm wherever, and I will share with you a little bit of my large fortune." Something like this, honestly, it's been ongoing since the, and I'm really not joking, it's ongoing since the mid of 19th century. What we call today in Europe the Nigerian prince scam, actually it was known as the Spanish prisoner on the 19th century, and works exactly in the same way. Somebody is apparently stuck. It's a very rich person that needs your help. And if you help with a little bit of money, of course, they will reciprocate with a lot of money. So it's about psychology, Arin. We are using that personal data to try to scam you. The thing is that before the advent of AI, the phishing was silly, as the case that we just said. Warren Buffett, I don't have problem. I have a problem with IFRS. Please help me. Of course, mate. Of course. And it's ridiculous. That was usually the dynamics and the engineering and mathematics behind that kind of phishing. It's massive. They need to send several millions of emails just to reach two or three unfortunate people that will literally bite the bait. So that's essentially it. It's cheap. It was cheap. Millions. One that they can hook. Okay, they did a good money. Also, the cyber scammers Of course, if you check reports of Gartner or any kind of important consulting company, McKinsey, they publish this kind of stuff. The success rate of those campaigns are close to, last time that I checked, 0.009,
wow.
Which is, hence, they need millions of emails.
Right.
But now, and this is where I will close and I will give you the final answer. Before, 10 years ago, before the AI, we had such thing called spear phishing or whaling or the CEO scam. Then the scammers, they had highly qualified individuals, engineers with certain skills that they put to particularly follow the steps, investigate, run a real investigation over a particular target. And once that they knew that perhaps they are in Duolingo, perhaps they are working in this company, perhaps they are working in that other company, perhaps they have a GitLab repo from which they are really happy because they are actually learning a little bit of Python. Using that, then they say a properly crafted, personalized phishing email that if it's on the right time, if you don't pay attention, if you have a very thick digestion after the paella, perhaps you will click and you will believe because, okay, it's GitLab. I have an account of GitLab on the email. Something like, we noticed that you grossly violated the terms of conditions in GitLab and you have 24 hours to provide allegations. Otherwise, we will delete your account and we will remove forever all your repos.
Right.
I'm sure that you will act upon that email.
Right.
This, 5 years ago, this was selected just for the high net worth individuals, rich people, CEOs, CFOs. Everybody heard about the case of the CEO scam on which apparently somebody calls the CFO making a huge mess. I'm in the middle of the airport. I will lose this. I will lose that. We are in send this invoice now. And they do. So if for the regular ridiculous phishing campaigns, the success rate is 0.009, this kind of heavily targeted phishing ramps up to more than 28%, which is like thousands more effective than the regular one. And before the AI, we were safe because average Joes like you and me, we were safe. We were very small fishes in the sea. We don't care about the things, those things. That is the kind of things that people like Mark Zuckerberg or Bezos, they should be aware of. Not us. But now with the AI, the change, the game completely changes. Now, the same individuals, with the help of an LLM, with code vibing, with vibe coding, literally in one day, they can create a platform that will search for hundreds of thousands of individuals, create a proper profile, and send this kind of exclusive, unfortunately, but killing type of spear phishing against regular individuals. And again, we are talking about something ridiculous to something incredibly more effective. And again, the chances is that your money one day could be gone. Because if I will know what is the electrical company that your granddad is using, I will use that to try to scam him.
Mm-hmm.
Or the water supply, or something really personal to him. Wow. This is the value of the publicly available data that in the wrong hands might be extremely, extremely dangerous and hurtful against the average people.
What strikes me most is how you touched on just how rudimentary it used to be, you know, say 10 years ago. And now that more data is being collected, and with the advent of AI and large language models, They're collecting so much that they can make these inferences about people.
It's a very scary thing. It's very much threatening. If you open any kind of website or the app that you install, you allowed to share that information with third parties, they will know if you are driving, because the app, many apps are sending constant telemetry to their servers, and that information will be collected. Mm-hmm. So it's not very nice. It's not very, I would say, it's not giving any kind of peace of mind knowing that there are companies that are profiting from this. I'm doubling down on the point of how the AI broke the market. Those reports that I sent you, actually those that that is an output of a platform that me myself I developed for OSINT, open source investigation, using publicly available tools, the top 20 most known open source investigation tools that they are out there in the internet. They are free for everyone to choose and to take and to change. I use those to create this to allow the masses to understand what happens if somebody can collect all the single thing that you did online, something that you wrote 20 years ago, some user that some place where you logged in, everything. You collect everything and you see with your own eyes, this is me, this is my digital identity. That is a little bit more, I would say, scary, threatening, unpleasant.
It is. And it's crazy because I'm looking at some of the results in my own report, and it's from sites that I didn't even know that I had and that still exist. It's got social media handles from accounts I don't even use anymore and from ones that I use today. It gives me, you know, I also generated a report. So you sent me four reports. I've also generated one from Incogni itself. I have a high physical safety risk because my addresses are exposed. I have a high scam and spam risk. It says my social security number is likely exposed, which doesn't surprise me because of the Equifax breach that happened a little over a decade ago now, maybe. But I mean, just from looking at my own report, and you know, I work in cybersecurity. I cover news. I'm conscious about my own security and safety. And yet again, it says here that I am at high risk.
And I love that you put it that way. And you know what happens, Harin? Now, you are I would say a security conscious person. You are a person that works in security. Now you understand the risks. But the problem is that you didn't know this 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, because we humans, we are that. We are humans. You remember a little bit what you did this morning. Perhaps you will, something you may remember from yesterday. I don't remember absolutely nothing. Thanks God my head is attached to my body. I'm not losing it. I'm really incredibly grateful for my lovely wife to keep me on track. But it's that. More or less everybody is the same. Perhaps you will remember something remarkable that happens 3 or 6 months ago. And this is normal because we are humans, and that is called episodic memory. We remember just remarkable things. But a machine is not working like that. A machine, a computer, must, it's engineered to remember absolutely everything that's the purpose of it. Now, if you put this in scale, all the computers that right now they made up the internet, they remember you. Even if you briefly checked up on those websites 13 and a half years ago, they will still remember you. Now, if those machines are responding, if somebody like me, or a cyber scammer, a criminal, knows how to collect all that that machine-driven information, they can collect an incredibly detailed picture of yourself. Because now you are a conscious person, but again, you were not 15 years ago. The problem is that your traces, what you left behind 15 years ago, is still there, and could be used to hound you or to try to scam you.
Right. And when you were saying that, you just sort of like unlocked a new fear that I have about people and what information they provide to Claude and ChatGPT. Because, people share an ungodly amount of personal information with AI. It's just.
This is what I said. That's why I love that you put it that way, because you clearly hit exactly what we said before. It's a societal change that we need. We need to address, we need to help the people to understand the consequences of these. Digital hygiene, I really like to call it this way, because in the same way as United Kingdom back in, I would say, nearly 200 years ago, they had to impose the driving license. It was not because of a whim or a pleasure. Thousands of people were dying on a yearly basis with just a ridiculous amount of cars that they were driving at that time. Literally, there was a carnage. Government had to put a stop on that nonsense with the driving license. Imposing obligatory education on driving, they heavily curbed the deaths due to improper driving. And this is how we make safe our roads. In the same way, sex education, how all the governments on the West, they curb unwanted pregnancies, and they make aware all the young people about the risks through sex education. With digital hygiene, I think that it should be exactly the same. This is the only way that people will start to recover their own, I would say, data sovereignty, and we will curb all the hundreds of millions of either dollars or euros that are being lost, scammed to hackers just because our data is out there.
Before we conclude here, is there anything else from my report that we should touch on that might surprise me?
Something particularly interesting is the case of deep hidden webs. I think that on your case as well, we have something like the Wayback Machine, if I'm not mistaken, across yours. What is the Wayback Machine or archive.is? Again, and this is the true meaning of hacking. Hacking is just using a completely legit tool in an unexpected way, more often than not, with nefarious or non-legit purposes. The Wayback Machine and the archive.is is it's an archiver. It's lovely. It's very useful to keep a track on certain sites, but whenever there's like a sort of like a person that suddenly gets a lot of more, they become a celebrity. Somebody then suddenly unearthed out of nowhere a tweet of 13 and a half years ago. Very weird. That was like a discussion that ended up on racist slurs or whatever crazy thing. These most than not comes from this type of deep web links. Even if the website has been deleted, I want to insist, machines are meant to always keep information. I don't remember what I did yesterday, but every single machine that I touched during this last years, they know me. And that is something that very much concerns me.
So that was Miguel Fornes, cybersecurity expert at Incogni. Miguel, thank you so much for coming on 9 to 5 Mac Security Byte. It was great to have you.
Thank you.